Hi, and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. This is the show where we discuss ways to achieve peak performance at any age and maximize health and longevity. I'm here today. I'm your host, John Zombro. I should mention that. And thanks for being with me. And I'm also here with my amazing co-host, PK the Incomparable. Good morning, PK.
John, good morning.
So today, episode number 103, we're going to talk about structure and function.
Structure and function, that is, it's almost mysterious. You know, had I not scanned our notes, I might not know what you were talking about.
I'd say it's mysterious and also ubiquitous.
It's wide. It can mean so many, open to interpretation. And that's why today we're going to drill down and really get into what you mean by structure and function.
Yeah. So again, folks, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us. If you are a regular listener and you're a lifetime athlete, hey, we love you. Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. And if you're new to the show, hey, welcome. And we hope you get something out of this. I'm pretty sure that you're going to. And I'm just going to jump right in. Here we are at the Lifetime Athlete, and we're talking about structure and function. And so those words, I think the words themselves are familiar to all of us, particularly when we consider the lens of human movement. So structure and function, they are interrelated, they're interdependent, and it's all about how our bodies are shaped and how they move, forming an amazing integration. So that's what I'm hoping to focus on with you, PK, sir, in today's discussion.
I love it. Well, don't make me wait because I'm on the edge of my seat. Where are we going to get started talking about structure and function?
So you love it. But of course, if you and I were dumb and dumber, you would say, I like it. I like it a lot.
I would, but I leave that to you. You know, that the singing impersonations, you know, I'm just a man on the street here trying to learn a little nugget, pearl or two.
Well, learning and sharing and growing, that's what it's all about. So, first of all, let's define these words, structure and function, both in dictionary and in TLA terms.
Let's do it.
So structure is the arrangement of and relations between the parts or elements of something complex.
No doubt.
And of course, if I TLA-ify it, if I lifetime athletify the term structure, it's the shape of the human organism, both in its parts and its whole, particularly the skeleton.
Yes. Okay, I got that. Skeleton structure. Okay. Good. Go into function, and then I've got a question for you.
Okay. Function, per the dictionary, is an activity or purpose natural to or intended for a person or thing.
Yes.
And the TLA version, it's the pattern of movement or operation exhibited by the body.
Absolutely. I got it. So and that makes sense. It's actually, you know, especially when you kind of break it down and simplify it there, it does make sense. The shape of the human organism, we've got the skeleton, and then it's what movement looks like, what operating that structure looks like. I'm curious what sparked this topic before we get a little deeper. Broadly, how did this pop into your mind?
I'm excited that you asked that because we didn't discuss this at all. But as you know, the Lifetime Athlete is the home of the Hard to Kill workshop. That's coming up on February 29th here in Bozeman, Montana. And it's really all about, you know, optimizing human performance as well as maintaining that at a high level across the lifespan. Well, I was actually giving that workshop yesterday for one of my business clients. So we were doing an in-house version of that. And we got into this topic because it's one of the central topics of the Hard to Kill workshop. And folks were using words like fantastic and incredible and amazing as they, you know, began to learn about structure and function, particularly as we were doing some of the lab experiences. And so it was so fresh in my mind, I thought, hey, let's just talk about it on today's show.
I love it. And so it was born from these real life conversations of, now we all have We all have a structure and we all function on the daily, but you were sort of breaking it down and they were getting a lot from you just kind of pulling back the curtain or making sense of it. I love that.
Yeah. And this particular show, I should have identified it appropriately at the beginning. I'll make sure I do that in the title and notes, but this is a physical therapy basic show or a PT basic show. And so that thought of structure and function, as you kind of alluded to, it's constantly in the minds of PTs. We're trained to think about that and just live it constantly. And so it's really on the tip of my tongue, all the time, whether or not I just gave a workshop on it. That's just, I guess, how that goes.
I love it. So let's get into it. Let's start talking about structure. Can you put that in context for me, how you think about it?
Let's use the hip.
Why wouldn't we?
Okay. So, everybody thinks about their hip. You know, it's the most stable joint in the body. It's a ball and socket. You can picture that. The femur, that long leg bone, has that long shaft, and then it has a short neck, and then the head or ball of the femur fits right into the socket of the innominate bone or the side of the pelvis. That's the acetabulum. So no anatomy quiz today, but that's, again, PT talk. And so there are differences in humans with respect to that socket. Some people have a deep socket that is shaped like a cup, and then others will have a more shallow socket that's shaped more like a dish.
You know, John, that is such a easily absorbable basic idea. And I'm sitting here thinking, no kidding, but I had never thought about that before. Like, you know, we dove into this deep in animal fit, how we're all different. You know, the human beast looks different, functions different, but I had never considered the fact that that would sort of trickle down to something as basic as the hip socket being vastly different depending on the type of human beast you are.
Precisely. And so this skeletal structure can vary from person to person, and it can vary in several areas. I'm going to share with you three. First of all, what we call the angle of transverse plane orientation. So I mean, we're talking here, we don't have it's not visual, but the transverse plane is basically what the body moves in when it rotates or twists. And so it's kind of like if you were looking at me top down, you're standing on a ladder looking down at my mostly bald head, you'd see it rotating or twisting. And so that's transverse plane orientation. Well, the hip congenitally or genetically has what we call kind of a normal range of how it sticks out to the side. But if it's a little bit more forward, we call that anteversion. And if it's a little bit more backwards, we call that retroversion. And so those are variances that we see in hip structure in humans.
Absolutely. Okay. I'm tracking.
Okay. The next one is what I would say it's an angle of frontal plane orientation. So if you're looking at me from the front, and you're looking at my hips and how, you know, that femoral neck comes out and then the shaft goes down, forms an angle. Well, if that angle is a bit narrower, smaller angle, it will drive my knees closer together under my hips. That's called coxa valga. And conversely, if that angle is more open and the legs are going out, it would be termed coxa vara. And so, again, just some differences in how people are put together. Oftentimes they're quite subtle, but we do have these.
Absolutely. And then you said there was a third.
Yeah, the third one is basically kind of back to more of those animal fit models again. It's the degree of soft tissue integrity. So soft tissues are basically the things that aren't bone. And so we've got the joint capsule, which is kind of like that really strong gristle sac that surrounds the joint. The ligaments that add more support to that. The tendons of the muscles kind of connecting and crossing the joint. And then lastly, the muscles themselves, acting on the hip, of which there are over a dozen. So moving right along, I would say that, some people are going to have these really dense, strong connective tissues that just don't give a lot. And then others are going to have these very much more, supple, elastic fluid, willow in the spring, flexing along the stream bank type of nature. And so, again, those are differences that we'll see in people, and certainly they have a pronounced effect at the hip.
Sure. And then, so you take the hip, first of all, we have, one on either side, and then all of the other elements of the human structure. It's quite complex. It just multiplies the everything that you talked about in the hip applies to all the areas of the body.
Yeah, and things work in layers in the human genome. So some of these differences, you know, have been proven to be population specific. And so we have some population generalities, different, you know, races, cultures, ethnicities, ancestral background. And then we have some room for individual variants within that. But since this is a PT basics show, Dr. Stuart McGill, who is a physical therapist, I think he's now retired from Ontario. He had done a lot of work with this morphology of the hip, particularly with looking at power lifters.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I won't get too far into it, but basically what he found was that the power lifters who were largely of, say, Eastern European descent and some Middle Eastern countries where, again, we have quite a few power lifters, they have the dish-shaped hips most frequently. Hmm. And then people who are from Western or Northern European descent, like say they're Irish or Scandinavian, they have a proportion of that, they're going to have much more likelihood to have this cup shaped hip.
It's really incredible. And I think that it does go back to what we thought about animal fit. It's knowing where you personally, where one shakes out with our own structure. All right, now let's talk about, you know, how we would think about the hip socket as a structure and then like driving function or combining with function or whatever that means to you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely a strong case of structure driving function when we think of the hip, and then especially what we were looking at yesterday in the Hard to Kill workshop, doing the squat. So we had a lab experience that looked at squatting, and you know, just to describe this again, we don't have to go to the greatest of depths, but as we move from standing upright to squatting, the hip has to go through some requisite motion to allow our bodies to, you know, get up and down.
Absolutely. And I think everyone can identify with a squat.
Yeah. And so the movements in the body, they're, you know, sometimes they function via what we like to call them chains, sometimes kinetic chains, movement chains, you know, whether you like that term or not. We have what's called obligatorily coupled motions. And so, you know, when you move down or descend into a squat, your hip has to be able to relatively do three things. It has to flex, it has to abduct, and it has to externally rotate. Now, you don't see a ton of that motion because you're looking at the composite movement of the person going up and down, but that's actually what's occurring in the hip on the descent: flexion, abduction, external rotation.
Interesting. And again, you know, if we got that super slow-mo up close camera breaking it down, that's what would happen. But it's all combined and it's very subtle, as you mentioned, when we do a squat. So what happens when we come up?
So let's call it the ascent. Okay. Seems reasonable. So when you ascend out of the squat, your hip is going through the motions of extending, adducting, or A with two D's, that's coming towards midline, and internally rotating. And so how that leg actually moves relative to the pelvis, and to some extent pelvis relative to leg, is based on those two parts, the ball and socket, kind of moving relative to one another and communicating. So you stand up, you extend, adduct, and internally rotate. And it's these things just keep reversing if a person keeps repping.
Absolutely. I'm tracking.
So again, probably worth emphasizing, it's kind of subtle, you know, so it's not like you see, you know, again, as you indicated, you know, when you look at it, you know, you don't, it's not overtly obvious. We always want to try to remind folks, we've talked about this on the PT Basics show before, that movement occurs in the human in a triplanar capacity. So we're moving, you know, forward, back, side to side, and rotating about, now this is really fancy, about what are called instantaneous axes of rotation. So, you know, as you move down through the squat, you know, the axis, the point where the hip is moving will change. And then what the socket is doing versus what the ball is doing will change as well. It's an artful dance that, you know, we appreciate when we see movement, but it's really cool when you start breaking it down and looking at it through kinematics.
I am absolutely tracking with you. And I think that, you know, I'm envisioning what you're talking about. Keep it going.
Okay, so if we are looking, just watching the squat, and we isolate the hip, and we, which wouldn't be a realistic situation because we're not considering the sacrum, the posterior kinetic myofascial chain, the demand for the increase of the shin ankle or ankle dorsiflexion. All those things are important, but the ability to go smoothly up and down regarding the hip will be dependent upon that hip joint being able to move through all the necessary range of motion in those essentially six components that we just discussed.
Absolutely. And I think that maybe it's your hip, maybe it's another area in your body, but I can certainly identify with the opposite of that range of motion. You know, it feels like rusty gears, mm-hmm. Where you just don't, where it really, you feel limited in your range of motion. So interesting. Okay. I'm tracking.
Yeah. And I like the way you talked about that rusty gears and limitations, because if we isolate the hip again and we say, well, okay, now that dish shaped hip, the one that's technically slightly more dysplastic or has more mobility, well, it easily accommodates the motion demands of the squat and it maintains proper joint spacing all the way up and down. And that's important because in joints, we don't have bone on bone. We always have a spacing between those bone endings. It's called a fluid film interface. And that's where our synovial fluid is providing a little bit of lubrication and even cushioning.
Interesting. Okay. I gotcha.
So now you go to what you were talking about, you know, really the restriction or the rusty feeling, as you mentioned. So that's the cup style hip. It's more restricted in total mobility. So it tends to, in trying to get all the way down and up in the squat, tends to take up all of its available motion, and then it loads into compression. And that's bone on bone as depth decreases. So hitting a bony block never feels good. You know it. And that's why I think what you were alluding to there. And this leads to femoroacetabular impingement, FAI is a nice short way to say that, pinching in the anterior hip, and osteoarthritis. So, we have to be aware that unless the body can safely compensate elsewhere, and some do, that hip is jamming every time. And so, chronic, heavy, deep squatting at end range are not great for this cup-shaped hip.
Right. And I mean, something's got to give. It's just a classic, we don't even need to use fancy terminology, like, It absolutely something in the body has to give, since you're working with the bone right there.
Yeah, and to say it plainly, it ain't bone, because you really can't force bone. You can't force it to reshape that much. I mean, bones, under loads, they can bend and twist, and that's kind of cool. But when you look at the joint structure, just banging into its limitation over and over won't reform that joint. The joint will basically say F you.
Right, exactly. So knowing what you got and what your experience is, I'm certain as we're going to get further into this discussion, it's really about how can I use that information as power to have a better experience, et cetera.
Yeah, and so it comes down to that. Hip shape will be one of the major determinants looking at structure and how a person squats, referring to function. It's obviously a bit more complicated than this example that we discussed, but someone with a naturally limited hip will be more likely not to squat as deep and will exhibit compensatory strategies like rounding the lumbar spine, which is a no-no under load.
Right. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
So probably enough talking about squat. Now, let's move into kind of a different capacity or a different framework. Let's start with identifying a specific function and just kind of, dive into that.
I love it. What are we going to talk about?
Well, just for fun, let's use jumping and landing, because it is fun.
It is fun. And perhaps we would say this is an activity that might be limited to the youth. And I think that or if you're not of the TLA mindset, that's where you might shake out. So I'm excited that you picked this as a way to sort of frame this up and get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah. And hell no is kind of my answer there, because that's where pushback exists. I can't jump or land or sprint or play, because that's only for kids. Well, okay. That's why you should try to stay a kid all your life. But with jumping and landing, this will make total sense. We have a propulsive strategy to get off the ground, and upon landing, we have an absorptive one.
Absolutely. That tracks completely.
Yeah. And so that's just kind of, what the body's putting together, all those things that it can do. It's recruiting the muscles and, you know, breathing and tensing and releasing. And yeah, okay, so that's those are the strategies, propulsion and absorption. And propulsion can be thought of as an overcoming contraction or series of mechanisms. So we're overcoming inertia and gravity to get off the ground. And absorption, let me try that again. Absorption, you know, that's a yielding situation where we're managing the force of landing. And so again, as a PT basic show, Bill Hartman, physical therapist, he is really deserves credit for putting forth a lot of those ideas about overcoming and yielding. And I always love to give credit to anyone, especially my colleagues. So this is for all human beasts. We're programmed genetically to be able to jump and land. It's not just basketball players and volleyball players. And here's the cool part for you, PK. There's a high correlation, extremely high, to athletic skill, speed, fall prevention, and even longevity with jumping and landing.
That makes sense, but I want you to go into that a little bit more detail. Okay, and let me parse this back. You said there's a high correlation to athletic skill, speed, fall prevention, and longevity.
Yes.
so what you're saying by that is those first two, athletic skill, speed, you're connecting those with fall prevention, which is just something that you're doing as you're going about your life. And then also it connects to longevity, because I wouldn't necessarily connect all those dots that you just put together on my own.
I see what you're asking and I will dive. So first of all, you think of the sport. I mean, think of any sport. Mm-hmm. Good athletes can jump. It doesn't matter if you're a swimmer, actually swimmers jump off the blocks. But the point would be, it's really a requisite skill in the human to be athletic, is to be able to jump and land. Then when you look at speed, there's actually a fairly good correlation between jumping ability, vertical jump, and speed, capacity or speed development. And one of the reasons is both of those things require a coordinated and massive recruitment of type 2B muscle fibers. And so that, again, those fast twitch fibers are critical for rapid movement in the human, and jumping, of course, is one way to keep them trained as well as doing other rapid movements. Now you get the fall prevention. It's really the same thing. Those are the very same muscles that are involved in balance and what are called riding reactions. And so, if you trip a little bit and you're starting to go, well, those fast twitch fibers can shoot the leg out, and you can catch it in many cases. And that's really a powerful thing to think about for training for safety for all of us, but particularly as we get into our later decades. And then ultimately longevity, it's the same deal, because if you have those capacities, you don't end up crashing, breaking your hip, going into an institution, getting pneumonia and dying, which is actually a very, very strong statistic.
Right. That's that is a vivid, but far too commonplace situation. So, well, it all makes sense. Like if you have those things, then they're all connected, even though that we might not think with longevity or, we might being agile enough not to fall and break your hip, connecting that with a basketball player or a time in our youth when we were playing a sport like that was a lot of running and jumping.
Precisely. And that's what being a lifetime athlete's all about. It's what the Hard to Kill workshop's all about. In fact, it's basically jump to live is what I'm talking about. So you might say, uh-oh, that's not one, but that's two Van Halen ops right there. So, you got Dave, might as well jump. you might as well jump. And by gosh, you should. And then also Sammy singing, you've got to give, you've got to give, you've got to give to live. Well, okay. Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Well done. I where I shake out Dave over Sammy, but still, Jay-Z is at the top of that threesome.
Yeah. You might as well jump, and you might as well give yourself a jump to live. That's all I got to say on that.
Absolutely. So let's take this example and talk about function affecting structure. Let's take it back to the human beast and connect these dots further for me.
Okay, so when you jump and land, like mm-hmm. Roth on that video, which was freaking phenomenal.
Amazing
you
know? Video.
Okay, so we have this wonderful amortization phase. So when you're amortizing energy, what you're doing is you're converting potential energy to kinetic energy and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And it's really a wonderful injection of life giving load into the human beast.
No doubt. No doubt. And that does. I mean, it's easy to see.
Yeah. Loading is good. Loading is what we need to thrive. Loading is not to be feared. We want to go about loading intelligently. Yes. Not like idiots, but we need loads to live.
Yes. And that runs counter to a lot of the just reduce the impact completely, et cetera, methodologies, or ideas that were pervasive, you know, like were prevalent a lot, maybe in the last 20 years, but have been, depending on where you shake out, sort of disproved or, you know, counteracted, or it's hard to get the right information. But at some point you could have come across a PT philosophy that was reduce your impact as much as possible.
Yeah, and that's what we were talking about in Hard to Kill, and mm-hmm. we will be talking about it in the workshop here in Bozeman on February 29th. Sure. It's I'm going to repeat myself three times: context, context, context. And really what I mean by that is, yeah, there are times when we want low impact and we want to reduce loading, and maybe that's because we're trying to progress a person and they've been injured or deconditioned, and you know what's appropriate to do, what's indicated. But then ultimately, where does the high performing lifetime athlete human beast go? It's in managing loads like a pro.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, we'll keep on going.
Okay, so what happens over time is that jumping mm-hmm. function drives structural enhancements, since we're talking about structure, in the lower extremity. The bone density increases magnificently. In fact, eating meat and jumping is more powerful than taking medication, calcium supplements, and walking. And you're probably going to take me to task on that statement as well.
I'm not. No, I think that I just, at this point in the conversation, it's really sinking in about the interconnected nature of the function and the structure.
Yeah, and so obviously what the science says is that, you know, bone is 50% protein. It's made up of a protein matrix. And if we are getting that protein from meat, we're also probably getting some of the fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin K2, which helps with bone mineralization. And that's actually a bit more important than just calcium, because it's easy to get calcium into the body. So, you know, making that point. And then obviously jumping is a more powerful loading stimulus than is walking. Now, is walking appropriate in many cases and valuable? Yes, it is. But just wanted to say, if you want to make yourself, let's say you're a 28-year-old female runner and you've already had a couple of stress fractures in your career. Well, if you want to be more resistant to stress fractures, recognize that's a metabolic problem as much as it is a mechanical problem. So mm-hmm. what we need to do is say, we got to get you on some meat. Yeah, you want to fight it and push back, but that's what I'm going to say. You're going to need to eat some meat, and you're going to need to incorporate jumping into your program. It almost will bulletproof you if you do it correctly. It needs to be in the protocol. And now if you said, okay, now I'm 75, whether I'm a male or female, I want to prevent osteoporosis. Again, we want you jumping and landing. Now, does this mean you're doing plyos off of a 48-inch box? No, that's not appropriate. But, you know, we want to find a way to safely incorporate this technique. So I got a lot of people who are not even using any, jumping box or device. They're just very lightly going up and down such that they can get a piece of paper under their feet each time. Now, and having said that, one of my clients, he'll be 70 this year. He is leaping on and off of a 36-inch box because he's been in the Lifetime Athlete programs for a while and he's trained that up. But hey, anything's possible.
Absolutely. And I like how you combine it there. That's super interesting about both of those examples. You need some jumping, and then you need to combine it with some, the nutritional component of that. And I think that those things, you barely ever hear, if ever, the connection between the two.
Yes, and that's because you don't make a lot of money giving good, sound advice regarding the basics. What
the
sells?
Basics.
What
yes.
sells is pills. You know, drugs, pharmaceuticals. It's probably one of, if not the most lucrative industry in the world. And you know, if you want to take some Fosamax and some calcium supplements and basically get a bunch of side effects and no real positive progress, go ahead. But actually, don't go ahead. Do what we're suggesting.
No.
Let's clean up your damn diet. And another shout out, guy has the Conscious Coaching website. Or no, it's the Art of Coaching website. He's the author of the Conscious Coaching book, Brett Bartholomew. Giving him a plug. Well, what Brett says is, damn it, sometimes you just have to plant a flag in the ground and stand up for what you believe in. And I think that's really, you know, what we're doing here with the Lifetime Athlete. We're telling people, hey, you know, that it's not necessarily easy to train and to improve your diet, but it works way better than anything else.
Absolutely. So what's the result when, regardless of what your exact scenario, when you're combining these components, what are you going to see?
Well, those muscles that we were talking about with all this jumping and landing, they become mm-hmm. stronger and they're able to contract more quickly and powerfully. So that's an example of the structure of the muscle. It's laying down some extra protein in there, and the machinery that helps the muscle to contract actually is enhanced as well. And then probably more importantly for most people, the joint capsules, the ligaments and the tendons, they will become thicker slightly and stiffer in a good way. In other words, able to transfer force and not collapse. They'll hold up the arch and align the lower extremities. And of course, the bones get denser and stronger too. So solid gold, nothing but net.
I'd say that's just so many wins in a row. Okay, so now that we the audience, or me on the other end of this conversation, can appreciate these relationships, what do you think is that big take home?
Our bodies, our human beastly bodies, are mm-hmm. awesome, but they have unique structural characteristics. Mm-hmm. And unique as in uniquely human, yes, compared to the other primates, but also within, you know, each individual. So we've got sure. the talk there. So with movement, mm-hmm. if movement is suboptimal, We have to be able to determine two things. So you can determine this yourself if you're, you know, astute, and maybe if you listen to podcasts all the time, that might be true. Or maybe you have hired someone, a professional, a coach, a trainer, a therapist, who can look at you and who can really know, have that ability to tell, well, what's the pattern here? What's the prime driver? What's the root cause? These sorts of things. So you have to do this to determine two things. Number one, is this suboptimal movement that we're seeing due to a soft tissue restriction or a motor pattern? So in other words, your body's just, you know, it's a little stiff, it has to kind of limber up, or you haven't quite learned how to perfect that movement. If either of those things are true, we can coach and cue and train our way to better movement or function.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But on the other hand, if we're looking at something that just doesn't feel right, and it feels like you're banging up against a bony block. And I'm always, you know, as a clinician, if somebody says it feels like I'm banging up against a bony block, they sometimes even use that term. Well, I'm like, that's probably because you are, and we need to respect that. So it's not going to change, and we need to either A, explore ways to accommodate that restriction and safely substitute around it to kind of be able to still do that movement, or we abandon that exercise or pattern and we move to a more effective one for that unique individual.
And that absolutely, it makes sense, but I can also see that it's not always the course of action, even if it's something that's that clear that you're actually bumping up against that bony block, that it's just, it is common sense, but I could see how that would not be the first thing that you would do.
And this gets into one of my great soapboxes, and probably some of those colleagues that I mentioned before as well. You see so much stuff out there, you know, on the webs, very, you know, you name it, the TV, the books, whatever, where people are really, they're really confident because what they found that they're doing works for them, or it works for a majority of the population that they seem to be working with. So they, mm-hmm. they accidentally fall into this bias, mm-hmm. maybe even intentionally, that, okay, this is the way things are done. This is the method. This is how we coach it. This is how we cue it. This is how you do it.
Yeah.
No, because that's not going to work for everyone. And so if we go back to this basic set of tools of understanding, you know, anatomy and structure and function, we can find a way to create the safe way to load, pain-free, gain conditioning, create a movement win for everyone. But it does take some thinking. And so I would just say, as an training, fitness, exercise consumer, audience and friends, if you can share this with your friends and family, anything that's not working is not because the program is awesome and you suck. It's more the mm-hmm. opposite. You're awesome. We just haven't found your awesome fit. And any programming individual who tells you suck actually sucks themselves.
Indeed. No, but seriously, that's a great. It's great advice, and it's uncommon.
Well, let's just say this. We'll close it up. If you love this kind of content where we break down the science of human performance and we explore ways to optimize the human beast, come to Hard to Kill, the workshop for folks who want to feel great, do more, be better, and die late, healthy, and quickly.
Absolutely. So, do you want to just give the folks whose curiosity has piqued like an overview of what the workshop is?
Yeah, the workshop it's basically a masterclass in kicking ass. And yes. what I mean by that is we actually go through and we kind of explain a lot of these principles that we've been talking about on the show, some of the PT basics things, but then we look at the 5-3-1 lifetime athlete system. So how do you keep that body? First of all, how do you get the most out of your body at any point in the age? So if you're a 16-year-old who wants a state championship, how can we get you a little closer to being able to get that? You're a college athlete. You want to get through 4 years really doing well. A middle-aged person with sports or fitness goals, or a person who's older. How can we get the most performance out of you at that very point? Can we use science and common sense to do that? And then also, how can we help you maintain it so that you stay high-performing, healthy, long-living through your lifespan? Well, that's really what this thing's all about, and it uses the 5-3-1 lifetime athlete system, applying the five foundational components of lifelong health, which is essential. We all have to have that, so we work on that. We work on then adding in the three essential elements of peak performance. How do you train and recover, and what's the mindset of a peak performing person, or dare I say a champion in sports and life? And then ultimately we kind of pull all that together with these practical experiences of, okay, well, we've talked about the didactics, but how do you put some of these major movement patterns together so that we can make our training even more effective? So that's really a lot of what's going to happen. And it's going to happen a few times for business clients. So if you're a listener and you have a small to medium-sized business and you'd like to have this experience, reach out to us at thelifetimeathlete.com. But otherwise, if you're a listener and you want to be in Bozeman, Montana, a beautiful place to be February 29th, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in closing from me, one specific ask, if you love this and we love you for being with us, share it with one person who you think this could really help them to achieve their goals, crush them, and get more out of life.
Absolutely. I echo those thoughts and appreciate the time today. If you like what you're hearing, rate, review. We'd love 5 stars if you feel that that's appropriate, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, listeners. Thanks, PK. Everybody, keep being amazing. All right.